Welcome to the North Central Baptist Church Podcast. We hope you're challenged by the message from our guest speaker.
Well, as Pastor Calvin said, my name is Rod Hanley. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. Grew up in the Pacific Northwest, but moved to Kansas City in 1989. And it's sure good to be in Gator Country today. I've been actually in the area since Thursday. My good friend Jerry Sinclair with Faithful and True has had me hopping here, there, and everywhere. We were at a big men's event yesterday called Iron Sharpens Iron out of Jacksonville. Had a chance to share three different times. In fact, Jim, it's so good to have you here today because Jim really was the spearhead of bringing Iron Sharpens Iron back to Florida, what, 10 years ago, something like that? So thank you for that history and heritage. By the way, I know University of Florida has 50,000 students, but is Amy here this morning? Hey, Amy, good to see you. I know a Gator. In fact, her dad and I are best of friends. In fact, Amy is best friend with my daughter, Brooke, who lives in Nashville, Tennessee. And she's graduated, was involved with Navigators here. And her dad sent her a text, I think, in the middle of the night, said, go to this service at 10:45, and I'll tell him you were here. So this is good. This is really, really cool. And of course, I'm also glad I'm in Gator Country because I'd love to see you guys beat the Gamecocks today as well. That would be really good as well. I'm a huge sports fan. My background with FCA is long and vast, and I've had a chance to interface with athletes really all across the country. But a couple special Gator friends right here is obviously Danny Werfel, the Tim Tebows, but also a graduate last year, Logan Shore. Logan's granddad, John Shore, is one of my best friends in Kansas City, and Logan was your number one pitcher last year and now plays for the Oakland Athletics. But anyway, love being here in this part of the country. Calvin, thank you for the invitation. Great to be here. We had a great time with your men this morning, about 130 guys from what I understand. I gave them kind of part one, but I told them that you guys get part two, and you didn't have to be here for part one to get part two. That's the cool part about what I'm going to share today. With the men, what I talked about was the power of an accountable relationship. And we talked about just the importance of accountability, how it's impacted my life. I gave a biblical background for accountability, but I left them with this question, and it's a question that I think all of us have when it comes to trying to determine who should we be accountable to. And the question comes down to this: can I trust this person? You know, what's this person going to do with my stuff? And so today, what I want to speak about is how to build a trusting relationship. How to build trust in a relationship. You know, when I grew up, my favorite cartoon strip was Peanuts. You know, Linus and Charlie Brown, Peppermint Patty, you know, Snoopy, you know, the whole gang. And if you remember the cartoon strip, Charlie Brown loved to kick a football. That was something he was really into. And Lucy always volunteered to hold the ball for him. But Lucy was very mean, very devious, because every time Charlie would take that running charge toward the ball, she would pull the ball away, and then Charlie would fly into the air, and he'd be screaming, and his back would hit, and this went on for years and years and years in the cartoon strip. Well, one day, Lucy said, Charlie, turn over a new leaf. In fact, I have a signed contract saying I will not pull the ball this time, you know, and here's the signed contract, and so Charlie trusted her, right? He trusts her. He got that running start once again and came, and once again she pulled the ball away. And he said, what about you? You said you had a signed contract. She says, well, the contract wasn't notarized. That was her out. That was her out. You know, she did her dirty business once again. Well, I want to talk about the antithesis, the difference between what that cartoon strip depicted and what trusting relationships is all about. In fact, I'm going to make a bold statement this morning to you. I think I could actually summarize this book, the Word of God, into one word. And that one word is the word relationship. You see, this book tells us how to have a personal relationship with God Almighty. That's this part. And that's the most important relationship that we can ever have. God has given us a love story, his book, to reveal himself to us. And he desperately wants a relationship with us. In fact, he's not interested in religion. It's relationship. And I often tell people that religion is man's attempt to get to God, but relationship is God's attempt to get to man. And he does it through his son, Jesus Christ, that vertical relationship. But this book also tells us about another relationship that's so important, and it's these horizontal relationships. It's the relationships that we have with one another. And isn't that, when you think about it, a beautiful picture of what this book's all about? It's about the cross, about getting to know God Almighty through Jesus and then working it out with other people. And this book is a guidebook for us to do relationships the right way. Francis Chan said this. He says, "Do you not know that nothing you do in this life will ever matter unless it's about loving God and loving the people he has made?" And what Francis is saying in that quote, he's talking about the relationships. And nothing else matters except this relationship and this relationship, working it out. And so today I want to talk about the power of relationships and the power of how to find trusting relationships. You know, we're gonna skip around to different places in Scripture, but one of the places we're gonna start at today is talking about the biblical example of Daniel and the relationships he shared. You know, I don't know how much you know about the backstory, but some of the select young Israelite men were brought into captivity into Babylon. And now they're supposed to serve this very evil king named Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar has got a kind of a regiment for these young men to go through, you know, certain foods and certain drinks and certain way you conduct yourself. And they were put into the mix. And Daniel chapter 1 verse 8, that is a young boy, Daniel made up his mind that there were some things that he didn't do, wasn't going to do. In fact, verse 8 says that Daniel basically said, "I'm not going to do this. This is not who I am." And he went to the guards and appealed to them that, you know, "Can I show you a different way? Because I serve a different God than you guys serve." And if you look at the language of Daniel chapter 1, an interesting transition takes place following verse 8. Daniel begins to identify that it's not just Daniel that's going to do this, but it's some friends of his. The language changes from a to an us to a them to togetherness. And it's these three guys named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These guys were in relationship. They obviously had spent some time together. They got to know each other. They were probably prayer partners and buddies and friends and advocates for one another. And they began to do the, and there was a change that took place as they had a different regiment. And even they noticed these men had something that they didn't have. And so Daniel and his friends found favor there. And then if you move to chapter 2, you see that this bad king Nebuchadnezzar had a really bad dream. He had a bad dream, and he went to his smart guys, you know, the overseers, the seers, the ones who are supposed to, you know, the magicians, and said, "Hey, you know, if you guys are worth your salt, you'll tell me what I dreamed, and then you'll interpret the dream also as well." And they're like, "Well, king, that's impossible. You tell us the dream, and then we'll give you the interpretation." No, you tell me the dream and interpret it. Well, they couldn't do it. And Nebuchadnezzar was very frustrated. "You know, you guys, you know, I'm going to get rid of all you guys. You're dead." And then they said, "Wait, there's this young boy named Daniel. This young boy named Daniel, and he's pretty smart, pretty bright. Let's bring Daniel into the equation." And so Daniel found out what the king wanted. And it's really cool what we see in this chapter 2. When he finds out what the assignment is, he goes to his three friends. In verse 17, he invites his friend, and they collectively begin to pray together for God to reveal what's going on. You see this relationship they have, which is not just the vertical, but the horizontal, work in a beautiful way. And Daniel and his friends are able to bring the revelation to the king and give great insight to what's going on. And so today I want to look at what made that relationship work. And so we're going to talk about this word called trust. You know, if you look up the dictionary definition of trust, it means a belief in, a reliance on, a confident expectation, being dependable or reliable. I know that's a lot of words, so let me kind of narrow it down for you so you can kind of get an understanding of what the word means. It means I believe completely and totally in someone or something. It's believing completely and totally in someone or something. And here's what I've discovered about this word in the context of relationships. When trust happens, a relationship soars. But when trust is not there, a relationship sours. it goes really, really, really bad. Trust is the glue of all relationships, and because God is all about relationships, we have a lot to learn today about trust. You know, one of my memories growing up as a young boy was the joy of flying through the air. I loved to jump. I loved jumping out of things. I loved jumping on things. As the oldest of three boys, my dad built a triple-decker bunk bed. And because I was the oldest, I got to be on the top bunk. And I remember vividly screaming into the house, "I'm going to jump!" And of course, that was a mechanism for my dad to run in from wherever he was at in the house, because he knew I wanted to fly into his arms. We had these massive trees in our backyard, and I'd, you know, figure out how to climb up there, and I would announce, "I'm going to jump," and of course, Dad would be there. When we go to the pool, I'd be on the edge of the pool, and "I'm going to jump," and again, he would always be there. And the reason that I always knew that he would be there is because he didn't pull one of these, you know, one of these deals where he jumped away and watched me splat. No, he was always there. You see, trust is built when your words and your actions line up, and I could always count on my dad to do that. Early in my sports career, I was a quarterback. And I'll be honest with you, there were some people on our team that I would not throw the ball to because I didn't know if they could catch it. I didn't trust them to catch it. Amy can testify that my kids, same age as her, you know, there came a point where, you know, they got their driver's license. And we, you know, as a parent, you know, can I trust my kids with the family car? Yeah, they've got a license, but, you know, do we trust them with that? We had to work with our kids through curfew issues. And trust was a key word when it came to establishing a proper curfew. Trust issues are common in a dating relationship, in your marriage, in parenting, at work. You know, if you're an employer, you know the value of having a trusted employee, someone that you can leave the keys with, someone you can trust in the cash register. Trust is paramount to so many different relationships that we have. One of the quotes that I heard that really impacted me when it came to trust came from the chairman of the board of PepsiCo. His name was Craig Weatherup. And here's what Craig said. He says, "You don't build trust by talking about it. You don't build trust by talking about it. You build it by achieving results, always with integrity and in a manner that shows real personal regard for the people with whom you work with." And if you break down that statement, if you break down his quote, here's what he's saying. There are two paramount pillars when it comes to building trust. And those two pillars are, one, integrity, and the other is love. You see, without integrity and love simultaneously working together in harmony, trust is a near impossibility. It just won't happen. And I've actually tested this out. I've inquired with people. I've asked them about, you know, how do you build trust? And listen to some of the stories that I have that validate what I'm saying about these two pillars. One person told me, "Man, I know my father loved me. There was very, very crystal clear love. He told me all the time he loved me. But apparently in this situation, the dad was not committed to doing the right thing at the right time. He couldn't, his word wasn't his bond." And this person told me, yes, the love was there, but the integrity was lacking. And really, when it came down to it, I didn't trust. On the flip side, I was with someone else who told me, "Man, my dad was into all the strict guidelines. He dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's. I mean, it was, you know, his word was good, but there was no affection. There were certainly no words of 'I love you' that were attached to it. Integrity high, love low, and it's hard to trust my dad." In our city, there's a minister that I know that's going through some rough times with his congregation. His love for his people is unquestioned. He is so good about the hospital visits and, you know, just taking care of so many compassionate needs. But there's been some recent financial discoveries that have raised some serious ethic issues in that church. And now there's an uprising. And the bottom line, the church isn't sure they trust him. High love, low integrity, trust. Not sure about that one. And on the flip side, again, I know a minister that's squeaky clean on the do's and don'ts. And he's very, very meticulous, very organized, very detailed, high, high integrity. But he's lousy at showing love to the congregation. And again, trust is lacking. in the workplace, the model works well. And in your marriages, it works well to think about how do you build trust. And I'd like to appeal to you today. It's when integrity and love are working in harmony together. That's when it really, really takes place. And so that's why I love that definition by Craig Weatherup. Talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. Real trust happens when you put those words into action, when your actions are filled with integrity and those people that you're connected to really believe that you love them. When those two things happen, trust is possible. Trust is possible. Let me give you a biblical example of trust in action. I love this story. It's found in Matthew chapter 14. And in this particular story, you know that the background is that Jesus, right before this take place, has fed 5,000 people. One of the greatest miracles he ever performed, 5 loaves, 2 fish, you know how it worked. And it's everybody's just sky high. I mean, this is a beautiful day. And at the end of the day, Jesus says to the disciples, you know, you guys go get in the boat, and I'm going to stay here on the mountainside and pray for a while, but I'll meet you on the other side later. And so they get in the boat, and they begin this trek across the Sea of Galilee. And apparently that night ended up being a very, very stormy night. A lot of action on the Sea of Galilee. Not a quiet night at all. And we read this in verse 24. It says, the boat was far away from the land, was being battered by waves, which shows us it was a stormy, windy night. And then it says, in the fourth watch of the night, and just give you context, it's somewhere between 3 and 6 a.m., it says, Jesus came to them walking on the sea, and when the disciples saw him, they were frightened and said, it is a ghost. And they cried out for fear, but immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. And you know what? I've thought to myself over the years, I think at that moment when Peter said, if it's really you, command me to come out, I think Jesus said to himself, this is going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be a lot of fun. Because what does Jesus say to Peter? He says, come. Come on. You want to do this? Come on. Now, here's the question I have for you today. What possessed Peter in that moment to come? Well, I think the bottom line of that answer is he trusted him, right? He knew that Jesus had integrity. He was a man of his word, a man of his bond. You know, when he would say something, he would deliver. You know, everything is connecting all the dots when it comes to the integrity piece. But he also knew, bottom line, that Jesus loved him. Oh, there was no question. And that's the reason that he jumped out of the boat and began to walk. And in fact, we read this in the verses that follow. It says, Jesus said, come. And it says, and Peter got out of the boat, and he walked on the water and came towards Jesus. Now, folks, I don't know how far he walked, but it's crystal clear from this passage that there was a number of steps he took. It might have been 2, 3, 5, 10, 50, I don't know, it might have been 50 steps. We don't know how many steps he walked, but it's clear that he walked. And I also know it's clear that he walked because at one point in this walk, he got distracted. Peter got distracted. Instead of keeping his eyes on Jesus and, you know, coming towards him, he started looking around. By the way, if he wasn't walking, he wouldn't have time to look around, would he? I mean, he'd be instantly sunk. But he's looking around, and it says he got afraid. Verse 30, but seeing the wind, Peter became afraid, and it says he began to sink. What does it mean to begin to sink? Is that like a slow motion sink? I mean, he began to sink, and in the midst of his sinking, he said to him, Lord, save me. Verse 31, and immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, took hold of him, and said to him, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got in the boat, the wind stopped. So why did Peter get out of the boat? Because he had trust in Jesus. He trusted Jesus. You know what? I love that story. And here's the bottom line of what Jesus was telling Peter that day. He's saying, Peter, I will not let you down. I will not let you down. I mean, that's the same message that when trust is in any relationship, that's the mindset we bring, that we will not let you down. Yes, and while we may be flawed, we may be imperfect. Of course, we're not Jesus in these relationships. Every one of us has issues. But we're communicating to the other friend, you can trust me. You can trust me. Back in 2011, I shared this illustration of Jesus walking on the water at the high school that my kids go to, that Amy went to. At least I'm at North High School. And I've had the privilege, and it's been a privilege, to go into a public school, a 6A high school, and to be the football chaplain for the football team. This year will be my 8th consecutive year that I've done that. During the early years I did it, my boys actually played football for the team, but they've graduated now, but they still let me come in and do about a 20-minute chapel service on either Thursday afternoon or Friday afternoon. They do their team meal centered around that. It's 100% attended by the team. It's a mandatory chapel service. I know we're breaking all the rules at ACLU. They'd freak out, but the head coach has given me that opportunity, and I've taken that opportunity. And then I get a chance to stand on the sideline Friday night and be engaged with the team and just help in any way that I can. Well, I shared this message with our team back in 2011. We and Amy can tell you, we historically, we're terrible. I mean, we're awful. We're really bad. And so I saved this message for the homecoming game. We do homecoming really early in our season. That way we haven't lost like 8 straight games. And this year we were 0-2 going into our homecoming game. And so I had this message, you know, I will not let you down. And our quarterback that year was a kid named Will Harrington. Will, special young man. And that summer, right before his senior year, he'd come to Christ through a Young Life camp. And was really on fire for Jesus. And so he was locked in on this message, really locked in. And when I finished speaking that, little did I know that night he would get onto his cell phone and he began to text to his teammates and to his coaches, I will not let you down. I will not let you down. You can, tomorrow night, homecoming, different. It's going to be different. I trust you guys. And I'm going to do my part. I will not let you down. And I showed up the next night for the game, and the coaches were like, look at the text we got from Will Harrington. And everybody was fired up. I mean, we're going to go out and we're going to do really, really good. We're going to win a game, maybe. I mean, this is going to be exciting. And we were stoked. And we went out the first half of that game and played the worst football game I think I've ever seen. We gave up, and you can check the record books. This is all legit. I'm not exaggerating. We gave up 42 points the first half in a high school football game. That's really hard to do. And we did it. Now, somehow, some way, Will Harrington put 28 on the board for us. So we go into halftime down 42-28. You talk about no defense. I mean, it was a crazy, crazy first half. Now, most teams, when they'd come to the locker room, especially if you put 28 on the board, you'd be screaming at your teammates, you got to start tackling somebody. But when I got to the locker room, and anticipating a lot of venom and a lot of junk, the defense was saying, Will, we let you down. But this next half, you can count on us. And they were sharing thoughts of integrity. They're sharing thoughts of love. They're believing in each other. Yeah, we stunk it up defensively, but we did some really good things on offense. And this half, you can count on us. And I want to tell you something. I've been involved, and this is no exaggeration. I've been involved either watching or playing or observing thousands of football games. And what took place in the second half of that game, I've never seen happen. After giving up 42 points the first half, that other team scored 0 the second half. And somehow, some way, we put 17 on the board and beat them 45-42. We won homecoming. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And now here's the cool part of the story. The reporter came to Will Harrington and basically says, what happened? I mean, you guys were, I mean, at the pace you're going the first half, there's no way. How'd you throw a shutout the second half? And Will Harrington said, Well, our chaplain told us last night, and he went through the whole Peter story, and he basically says, we knew we weren't going to let each other down. So, cool end of the story. There is always an end of the story to these things. The coach gave the team the next day off. The coaches didn't take it off. They went to a local print shop, and they had shirts printed. And those shirts had the words, I will not let you down. They were waiting for those kids' lockers on Monday afternoon when they showed up. And they wore those shirts underneath their pads the rest of the year as a symbol that we really trust each other. We believe in each other. And we're committed to each other. So I want to give you 5 keys to building trust. I like to build acrostics. I like to build acronyms. And I'll give you just 5 specific things that can take place for us to build trust. For us to build trust. Deep, deep trusting relationship with accountability partners in our marriage, in our workplace. These are transferable things that work no matter what kind of relationship you want to build. They will pass the test. So the T of trust stands for this: time, time, and time. In fact, it's impossible to build a trusting relationship without anyone, without spending time together. In fact, here's how it goes: no time, no trust, no relationship. It's just going to take some time. And those could be formal times or informal times. They could be play times or non-play times. They could be hanging out times when you got an agenda, when you don't really have nothing to discuss. It's simply a commitment to spend time with someone. And I want to tell you something. Obviously, the more time that you spend with someone, the better you get to know that person, and you're going to become familiar with their flaws and their warts and their shortcomings. Because guess what? When you get closer to somebody and when they get closer to you, guess what? You're gonna become more aware of the issues they're going to have in life. But here's the reality. As you become aware of their issues, they're also becoming aware of your issues. And you know, the golden rule says this: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so I pray that as you spend time with these people, you will recognize that they need the same grace and mercy and love and forgiveness that you want as well. And that happens in the course of time. So if you want to build trust, you got to spend time together. And, you know, going back to the illustration of Daniel and his friends, I think those guys spent a ton of time together. And they had each other's back over time. The second thing, the R stands for respond with excellence. Respond with excellence. How we respond to someone in a trusting relationship is so critical. For example, a couple of practical ways to be excellent. If you want to be excellent, don't be defensive. Don't be defensive when they might call you out on something, when they might care enough to actually tell you the truth. Rather than be defensive, consider maybe this is some wisdom from above that God is using them as a mouthpiece to speak some very important wisdom and advice into your life. And so part of responding with excellence is don't be defensive. Part of responding with excellence is following through with what you promise you're going to do. If you say you're going to do something, you do it. Part of responding with excellence is being prompt, being timely with your responses, not leaving things hanging. It's hard to trust people if they don't respond with excellence. If they leave things hanging, leave things undone. And so in everything you can do in your power, if you want to build trust, respond with excellence. This is the way it worked with our curfew, with our kids. You know, if they responded and got in at the right time, there's a good chance the curfew for the next weekend might be extended a little more because, you know what, they followed through with what they were going to do. So responding with excellence is something that we can do. And again, I see that in the story of Daniel, that because those young men responded with excellence, they were given favor, they were given privileges, they were given honors that were recognizable. Their peers said, God, there's something special about these guys. There's something noticeable about them. And I think it's how they responded with excellence. The U stands for understand and exceed expectations. And make sure you write that all down if you're taking notes. Understand the expectations, but then exceed the expectations. You know, in every relationship, and this includes even a marriage relationship, which is the most important earthly relationship we'll ever experience. But even in a marriage relationship, you bring certain expectations to the table. And to be honest, not all of your expectations are going to be met. That the humanness will come out, the flaws, the warts, the imperfection. We will not always do what we say we're going to do. And so here's what happens. At some time in your marriage, even your marriage, you'll be hurt, you'll be disappointed, you'll be angry, you'll be frustrated. It's inevitable. It will occur at some point if it hasn't already occurred. And so what happens is this thing called the gap. You see, on one side of the equation is our expectations, and on the other side of this gap is this thing called reality. There's expectations here, there's reality here. And guess what happens with the gap? You get to choose what goes in the gap. Do you put venom in the gap? Do you put hostility in the gap? Do you put angerness in the gap? Or do you put love in the gap? You get to decide what you're going to do with the gap. Here's what studies tell us. Studies tell us that in healthy relationships, both parties will go to ridiculous levels to believe the best in another person. What it's saying is they narrow the gap. They narrow the gap. And they extend lots of love and lots of forgiveness, and they believe in another person. So if you want to narrow the gap and believe the best, let me encourage you to understand the expectations involved and to do everything in your power to exceed the expectations. One of the ways we used to say it all the time was under promise and over deliver. It's kind of a one way of looking at that. So that's the U, understand and exceed expectations. Here's the S. S stands for serve willingly and creatively. Serve willingly and creatively. If you want to build trust, serving is a great way to do it. But you don't serve out of duty. You serve out of delight. You don't serve because you have to do it. You serve because you're eager to do it. That's why I insert the word creatively there. When someone is serving you and they've actually have a little bit of creativeness behind their service, you know they just didn't think up, you know, well, I got to do this. They've actually engaged their mind and thought, you know, how can I do this in a creative, even maybe a spontaneous, loving way that shows them that I really, really, really care. And I'm not doing it out of duty and not doing it out of obligation. I've actually pre-thought about the situation. And you know, when you think about a verse that applies here, Philippians 2:3 comes to mind. It says what? To consider the needs of others above those of your own needs. And I want to tell you something. You build a great bridge of trust when people see you serving. Serving them or serving needs. There's something that in our spirit that says, this is good. This is someone that cares not just about themselves, but they care about me. And then the T, the final part of this acronym, means you're a truth teller. You're a truth teller. You see, you can spend a ton of time with people. You can serve them. You can build a strong relationship. You can exceed expectations. But guess what? You undermine all of that if you don't tell the truth, if you lie. A person caught in a lie destroys trust that has been built. You know, Proverbs 12:22 says, the Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in those who tell the truth. John 8:32 says, what? You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. You know, that's the cool thing about telling the truth. When you tell the truth, you don't have to start the cover-up game. You know, who did I tell this to and who did I not tell this to? And lies, they're hard to perpetuate. They're hard to continue because you're not really sure, is this when I need to keep the lie going or need, you know, did I? I mean, it just becomes a quagmire. When you tell the truth, you don't have to take notes or keep notes because you know the situation and you're speaking authentically and genuinely and truthful. And so truth is always the best policy. Lies will always be discovered. They'll always be found out. And the truth will be, the trust will be shattered. And so it's important for truth to be communicated. So in closing, and this is the pastor's pastor's going to come up and share our invitation, if you want to build trust, it's time. If you want to build trust respond with excellence, that you understand and exceed expectations, that you serve creatively and willingly, and you're committed to truth. And that's how you build trust. We gave out to the guys some accountability cards today, the blue cards. I've actually, some of them got the green cards. Those are our teenager questions. And then ladies, I hate to tell you this, but I didn't bring any female questions. Usually when I go to men's conferences, it's not good for me to bring female cards because they all want to grab one of those cards and take it home to their spouse and say, you need to do this now. And they don't buy in themselves. So I always point the guys, go to the website. You can see the questions for the women on there. And I'll tell you that. I did have cards for one group, and this one gal looked at it. She says, Rod, the male questions are the basic, and the female questions are the advanced questions. That was her take on it. But I'll say this, that you know, the key to those accountable relationships working, whether it be male on male or female on female, is this. You got to have trust. You got to trust, because we all are flawed. We all are imperfect. We all have issues. But we serve a God who doesn't demand perfection. What he's looking for is direction. Not perfection, but direction. And as we walk this journey, as we walk in relationship with him and with others, we can come and say, will you do this with me? Will you sharpen me? Will you come alongside me? Will you pray for me? Will you encourage me? Will you bless me? Will you be my cheerleader? And that's really what an authentic, accountable relationship is all about. Thank you for the privilege of sharing today, and may God continue to bless this church and the work it's doing here.
Thanks for letting this small part of North Central Baptist Church experience stream into your life. We hope you will visit us soon and become part of the family of North Central Baptist Church, reflecting Christ's light on Gainesville and the world.